How were you involved with Mrs. Mercedes? Were you involved as her lawyer and with the bank that she was involved in?
Yes, in both capacities. She and Mr. and Mrs. Chester Adams, who were very good friends of hers, and Chester Adams at the time was the president of the First National Bank and Trust Company in Waynesboro. They had been on a cruise or two together. My wife Pauline and Mrs. Nicodemus, Emma Nicodemus, were also good friends. A group of them played golf several times together each summer, and they'd start in the morning and play golf, and then after that they'd have lunch and play bridge at one of the group's homes. And after Mrs. Nicodemus's husband, Edgar Nicodemus, died, and since they had no direct heirs or kinfolk, she began to think about what she wanted to eventually do with this property, which they had and which lent itself to some sort of public use, especially because through her lifetime she had collected a lot of museum type antique pieces of furniture and glassware and dishes. A lot of that was through the, with the help of William Bowers, Bill Bowers. And during that period of thinking about this, she discussed her inner thoughts with Chester Adams that maybe this place of hers could be turned into a museum since she had the initial makings for it. And she also discussed this with Anson Good, Anson B. Good, who was the trust officer of the bank. And it's my impression that shortly thereafter, they and she spoke to me about it, and it got to the point that she felt it would be well to get her various advisors together, and we had several meetings at her home in which she laid out to the group of us, that group being Chester Adams and Anson Good and me. I don't remember that there was anyone else initially in that. An idea like this has to get planted and sprout and grow, and you have to massage it and see where it will come out. And relatively early then in the process, we began to develop concepts about exactly what she would like to do and how she would like to have it take place. At that particular time, she did not want anyone outside her immediate contact group to know about it, except she had discussed it with her sister Hazel Geiser, who was unmarried and retired and living back in the Waynesboro community. And Hazel, like her sister Emma, had no other direct descendants, and she agreed with Emma that she would endow the museum, which later became, at Mrs. Nicodemus's request, known as Renfrew. Hazel Geiser's attorney was John Keller, now Judge Keller, and he prepared for Hazel Geiser a trust agreement, which placed her assets in trust, and at her death, they were to become an endowment for Renfrew Park, Renfrew Museum. Hazel died before Emma, and this then hit the newspaper because reference to it was made in Hazel's will. So at that point it was public knowledge that Mrs. Emma Nicodemus was going to establish, had planned to establish a museum at her home, and that her sister already had provided endowment. Now that's the early genesis of how this came about. In the process of discussing this plan of hers, Mrs. Nicodemus had some difficulty in exactly what it should be known as, and finally she said, well, I think we should call it Renfrew, just Renfrew, like the museum in Delaware, Winterthur. This is Renfrew. And finally, when she had worked out in her own mind a good bit of the details about how she wanted it structured, who she wanted to have in charge of it, and I'll come back to that in a minute, she said, now what are we going to do with the rest of the land? That's the next question. And so here again, she thought this out well and decided it would be so nice to have in this community a park in the nature of a quiet place. She wasn't contemplating a lot of athletic contests. She wanted benches and walkways and places where people could just go and commune with nature and be quiet and meditate and enjoy the surroundings. Anson Good was still in the picture as we were discussing this, and he, being a great fisherman, said, well, what about fishing, Mrs. Nicodemus? And she said, well, yes, we could have fishing. And but she said, if there's any swimming pool involved, I certainly wouldn't want it any place but away down at the south end of our property. I don't believe I want any of that kind of activity up in the upper area. But picnics, that was another thing that she felt was proper. And so this is how the park concept began to unfold, that it was going to be a place where people could enjoy nature and where they could go and be quiet and smell the roses, so to speak.
How was it decided, and who was picked as the person to be in charge of the Renfrew Museum and Park?
Mrs. Nicodemus was very anxious that if this gift of hers was accepted by the borough, that the management be in a separate group of people rather than be with the borough council. She felt they had enough to do to run the borough government, and that she would like to see the museum supervised and managed by a group of non-borough government people who had some feeling for a museum of the type that she wanted to see the community have. And consequently, in her will, she suggested names of people whom she thought might qualify as initial directors or managers or committee members for the management of Renfrew. And Anson Good, Lehman Guyton, Leroy Maxwell, Edward Miller, and Harold Shuck. And she also indicated that she thought that women who were knowledgeable concerning antique furnishings and early American furniture should also be considered for membership. In her will, she provided that at least three of the members of that management committee, later known as the board of Renfrew, at least three of them should at all times be persons nominated by the First National Bank and Trust Company in Waynesboro, trustee of the residue of her estate, which along with her sister Hazel Geyser's estate constituted the initial endowment for Renfrew. The initial board was comprised of a number of the people she suggested, they being Chester Adams, Dr. W.L. Guyton, Roy Maxwell, Edward Miller, William Bowers, and Helen Hoffman Hoover, who was not designated by name, but who was selected as a woman to be the first, be on the first board of directors. And she incidentally served until her death in 1991. Now, at the outset, the borough council appointed one person not suggested by Mrs. Nicodemus's will, nor nominated by the trustee bank, and that person was Patrick Bresler. Pat Bresler was a very able and person to serve on the initial board. He was much interested in fishing, and through the Pennsylvania Fish Commission, he had established within the perimeters of Renfrew in the Antietam Creek a fish for fun area where you could catch the fish and you had to throw them back, and this was the first one of that type thing in this immediate vicinity. There was a fish for fun, as I recall it, area designated in the Chambersburg area, but nothing in southern Franklin County. The second one. Now, because Ed Miller was a longtime employee of Mrs. Nicodemus's, knew more about her farm and property than anybody else alive, the borough and the initial board of directors wanted Ed Miller to be very much involved in the early stages and to act as the superintendent of the property until we got on board with professionals who qualified as curators. And so it soon developed that his position as a member of the board and his employment as the supervisor of Renfrew were somewhat inconsistent, so that sometime in the 70s when his term expired, or even before it expired maybe, he resigned, and he was replaced by H. Roland Weaver, who had been at one time the executive secretary of the Waynesboro YMCA and was very active in the community and in the church life of the community in general. Roland Weaver didn't serve too long because he soon left the community again. And now, where do we go from here? As I've already said to you, Mrs. Nicodemus's initial concern and interest was in establishing her home as a museum, illustrative of an early American home. The matter of the park was an afterthought. She never dealt with that until she had crystallized exactly her thinking about the museum. And then we had a little plot with a nice stone home on, which was going to be a museum, but we also had another 106 or so acres of land which was there, and something needed to happen. And so the park part of it was just what naturally fell in place after the museum was established. So in the early stages, the emphasis was on the museum, and we wanted to be authentic in what we did, and so we got the folks from the University of Delaware connected with Miniature to come here. We did that through our advisors, who formed the master plan for Renfrew. Do you have the names of American Heritage and so on? Let me see. When we were endeavoring to restore the house to the extent that it was necessary to make a restoration for museum purposes, we engaged the National Heritage Corporation from the Kennett Square area, as I recall, to do a master plan for us. And Rosemary Clooney, I think Rosemary is right, Ms. Clooney, from Winnetcher was the authority with respect to the furnishings that we consulted. And Mrs. Clooney from Winnetcher, who helped us in the early stages quite a lot, was Peggy Clooney, not Rosemary. In the early stages, our first curator as such was John Demler, who had been at a museum in Lexington, Massachusetts, and who with his wife came here and served us for several years before he resigned and went to the National Park Service at Harper's Ferry. Following him, a curator was James Koenig, who had been doing an internship at the Washington County Museum in Hagerstown, and whom Lehman Guyton knew by virtue of his membership on the board there, and he was instrumental in having him appointed as curator of the museum here. Koenig had a good background, and he brought the museum along fairly well. There was some dissension in the ranks. Everybody didn't cotton to Jim Koenig as we might like to have had them do, but there are always personality conflicts, and that existed in that case. Following Koenig's resignation, we were able to employ our present curator, James Smith, who had done service with the National Park Service in St. Augustine, Florida, and had worked for the state of Florida with respect to the historic center in St. Augustine. It's my personal opinion that this was a real godsend to Renfrew because he had the right background. He was a graduate of William and Mary and master's degree in archaeology, and he was visionary, and he implemented what he needed to do, and has been a great person for Renfrew. When he came here, he had two young children, and he wanted to get them into school someplace in the north that were better, he thought, than schools in Florida. And he indicated that he was interested in a long-term assignment, and that suited us very well because we didn't like all this shifting around of the director of the museum. But it's my own opinion that this has worked out marvelously well for Renfrew and, in a greater sense, for the community, because he has developed a lot of new ideas there. There have been archaeological digs that have unearthed things of interest for us in the community. And So far as the museum is concerned, there have been acquisitions made along the line from the accessions fund, which is always an item in the budget. In a sense, we felt a few years ago that we had gone about as far as we could go with respect to the museum and an educational program for the benefit of children. Do you want me to get over into this? Was started. Melody Stewart, who had a background in things in the ecological field, became very interested in Renfrew. She has been a volunteer for a long time, and she instituted this program of teaching basic ecology principles to elementary school children. You'll have statistics on this, but as of the meeting of the Renfrew Board just yesterday, January the 26th, 1992, James Stewart reported that in the year 1991, there were 5,271 school children who visited Renfrew and who were participants in the several types of programs which Melody Stewart is responsible for supervising. You got to really do it with her to appreciate them, and maybe you have. It's just marvelous to go down there with her and sit with her class on the grass and listen to the symphony of the things, of the birds, and of the sounds of the leaves as the wind blows through the trees, and of the other little insects around that you'll hear when you're very quiet. Well, this has become very popular and very educational. And for the year ahead, they have over 2,800 reservations for school children for the spring 1992 term. But 3,000 is about the limit they can handle in the spring. And again in the fall. Matter of fact, they say 3,000 is the maximum. Now, that gets us over into the fact that when we got out of really museum activity, we got into an educational program primarily for younger people and children, because the philosophy is that if you teach them as young children, as they grow to adults, they grow with it, and they are going to be good conservationists and to appreciate the things of nature instead of destroying them. So we felt all along this was a real good program, but it got outside the area of the museum. Consequently, a separate independent organization was established known as the Renfrew Institute. It had to be separate because it had to be financed separately, and it couldn't be financed in the budget that Emma Nicodemus and Hazel Geiser had provided with their endowments. So the institute was organized, and it has been financed by public subscription. Many of the events that are take place under the supervision of the Institute now at Renfrew are sponsored by community interests, banks, corporations, and public subscription. There has been a capital campaign conducted for that purpose. We've had for several summers now Shakespeare on Wheels. That has been sponsored, and that's a group of college actors out of Baltimore who do this in the summertime. They move their whole stage in on a trailer, and make and give evening performances, two evenings outdoors of a Shakespearean play. It's been a very much enjoyed thing, but it's sponsored by one of the, by the First National Bank. On Farm Day in the fall, we since the Fahnestock Barn has been restored, we have a function up there, a barn dance with a professional square dance caller, and there's participation in the square dancing by those in attendance. That's sponsored by another bank. There are various corporate sponsors for various of these events, and it just grows and grows in the community as a thing which most of us think is very worthwhile. Now, I need to say in connection with that that George Buckey, the retired president of the Landis Machine Company, Teledyne Landis Machine, has for many years been very interested in what's going on at Renfrew. He was initially interested in some sort of a preservation of things of historical interest relating to the industrial development of Waynesboro. And at one time, consideration was given to whether or not the barn at Renfrew might be used as an industrial, historical industrial exhibit place. That's never materialized, and partly because of the state regulations with respect to public buildings. We, if there were an exhibit on the second floor of the barn, such substantial changes would have to be made as to really destroy the barn as a barn. And we've not been able to pursue that, although we have put into the ground level of the barn the visitor center, which houses the pottery, John Bell pottery exhibit, and which has been a real fine thing. Some authorities have said that this is the finest collection of John Bell pottery they know in any one place. And the two Bell lions have been on exhibit in New York and have traveled on a traveling exhibit. One of them has traveled on a traveling exhibit. We're afraid we might lose them both at one time, so we just let them have one for the traveling exhibit. They're all, both of them are back in the Bell Pottery exhibit. But those are real museum pieces that are highly regarded by people knowledgeable in pottery.
How were they acquired? Were they Mrs. Nicodemus's possessions, or were they brought after she gave us the museum?
I'm not quite sure the answer to that. I think the lions were Mrs. Nicodemus's possession, but I'm not positive. A lot of the Bell pottery has been donated to the museum by people in this community who had it, and when they knew that the museum, that Renfrew had an exhibit of Bell pottery, they donated it. There have been some substantial capital gifts made by people who haven't really had a lot of recognition for it, and some of them didn't even want it, both in cash and in kind. And I would need to want to mention in that category Daniel Ruth and his wife, both of whom gave their residuary estates to Renfrew. Ralph Price, a former president of Landis Machine Company, Litton Landis, Landis Tool Company, Litton Landis Tool, made some substantial gifts to Waynesboro. Not that he was ever a director of Renfrew, but that he appreciated the value of it, and because I think Ralph Price, whom many of us knew as Pat Price, had a feeling that he wanted to give back to the community of Waynesboro something for what it had given to him. And he benefited many different organizations around the town. Renfrew happened to be one of them. Also, Dr. Guyton, Lehman Guyton and his wife have made many contributions to Renfrew that have usually been in the category of anonymous gifts. When you start mentioning these, you know, you're always at the risk of leaving out somebody that you just don't think of at the spur of the moment. But those are some of the substantial gifts that have helped Ren Troop do what it is. The visitor center came into effect because we had that type of gift. Well, I guess we're ready for another subject, are we?
All right. Were there any surprises in the development of the way the museum and park have developed at this point?
Well, I guess the biggest surprise is that the park has really expanded and developed in its program and use far more than we ever expected or anticipated that it would. But on the other hand, if you take a look at it, once you have a museum established and once you have it equipped with whatever additions are felt to be appropriate to those which Mrs. Nicodemus had, then you have no place to go. And while in the museum we have regularly attempted to have changing exhibits in the exhibit room so that there is something to attract people to come from year to year, not just to come once and say, well, I've been there, I never want to go again, because one year you may have one part of a year you may have a hooked drug exhibit, and another part of a year you may have some other type exhibit. And there are always a couple of different exhibits during each year that while the museum is open from the end of April until the end of November and through the Christmas season. And that is necessary in order to keep the museum as a viable thing that people want to come to. But once that's established, you have no place else to go or to expand. But here was all this parkland with a lot of things that could be done in it, and Melody Stewart was one of the people who saw the opportunity to expose our elementary school children to this type of educational fun, because that's what it is. They enjoy it. They want to come, they have a good time, and in the process of that, they're really learning a lot. So that in itself is somewhat of a surprise, but it just naturally follows what should happen. Another organization that has embraced Renfrew is the Boy Scout organization. When a scout reaches the point in his advancement program in scouting that he wants to seek to become an Eagle Scout, which is the highest rank of scouting, he needs to do a project of community, of value to his community or to his church. And there have been 25 different Eagle Scout community projects done in Renfrew since its existence. Various types of signing has been done. Walkways have had benches installed in them. Trees have been marked to identify them, so as you walk through the park area, you can look at the tree and then look at the name on the tree and know what you're looking at if you don't otherwise know. That type of expansion was never contemplated in the early stages. At least, in my belief, I don't think Emma Nicodemus ever realized that the park would become as much of a community factor as it had. I'm sure she'd be pleased with it because she wanted this to be worth something to the community and not just stone and mortar and inside furnishing. So, that's... You know, I've previously mentioned George Buckey and his concept of an industrial museum, but I need to tell you that George Buckey has been the moving factor in the development of the Royer Farmstead. This property, you know, was historically owned by the Royer family. And George has spent untold hours in connection with the interpretive committee work, interpreting the Royer Farmstead that involved the various excavations that were made of the tannery site, of the mill site, of the lime kiln, and of course the restoration of the milk house or smokehouse and smokehouse. And he's now involved in a restoration program for the Fahnestock House. The historic Waynesboro Historical Society some years ago was very interested in the preservation of the Fahnestock House because it was one of the oldest of landmarks around here. And they raised funds to stabilize it and keep it from disintegrating it because it was in the process of falling down. Vandals were getting into it and had gotten into it and broken up a lot of things inside, principally flooring and walls. But now that it's been stabilized, and that was a result of a public campaign subscription conducted by the Historical Society, the windows have been boarded up and now they're in the process of gradually doing a restoration inside. George Bucky is the moving factor in getting this done. One of the persons who has been greatly devoted to the outside, the park, is Willard Ron, Reverend Willard Ron. He's much interested in birds, and every spring he conducts bird walks from April through May on Saturday mornings. They aren't attended by hordes of people, but they are well attended, and you don't want too many people in a bird walk because you'll scare all the birds away. But he's had a great interest in the outside and in the wilderness area. We have in the southeasterly corner of Mrs. Nicodemus's farm a wilderness area, thereby designed to permit those things that naturally grow to grow and those animals and insects that naturally habitate that type of area to rehabitate it. And you can walk through there, but it's not encouraged because that disturbs the wilderness part of it. Now, I guess when we make mention of names of people that have been instrumental here with respect to Renfrew, I should mention Undine Bridgers Warner as one who has been very, very much interested from the outset in the museum. And she's been through many different programs with Renfrew. She was early on, she was one of the guides. More recently, she's been very active with respect to the Christmas at Renfrew program in early December. And she is a member of the board and has been for some while. And those two people have had long tenure with Renfrew. There is you're probably aware of this, there is a tie-in between the Renfrew Board and the Renfrew Institute Board in that four of the Renfrew Institute Board must be chosen from the Renfrew Board. That is so that we do not have two sister organizations going at 180 degrees from each other. And it's working very well. It's the way it ought to work, and it's working very well. Now, of course, Ed Miller continues to be a reliable factor in the progress of Renfrew. I think he's practically married to Renfrew because he was been threatening to retire when he became 65, and I think that's happened, and he still is working with and for Renfrew. But there'll come a day when he needs to be replaced, and he's aware of that, and he has already begun to school another person who takes care of things when Ed goes away or for vacation and whatnot. And so there is a backup for it. Shirley Baker has been an employee of Renfrew under various titles for a number of years. She is now designated as assistant to the curator. She's a pretty talented person who is completely devoted to Renfrew and who is willing to spend unlimited time in whatever her assignments may be. In fact, she's so enthusiastic about Renfrew that some of the folks sometimes have the feeling that she oversteps her bounds, but then they've got to realize that it's done out of enthusiasm for the institution rather than out of any desire to do something she isn't authorized to do. But right now, it seems to me like we couldn't have a better person in the office of curator, and we couldn't have a more enthusiastic, energetic gal Friday than we have, and and we couldn't have a better volunteer corps or group of people who receive some minor compensation running the outside programs. Melody Stewart, of course, is one. Sherry Hess is another. The work of Will Shepherd and his present wife, who came here as an intern, with respect to the Royer Farmstead, has been a very highly satisfactory job. I don't expect we can keep for. I do not believe we can expect to have those people stay here a whole lot longer. They're about to have a family, and you can't raise a family on part-time employment as a professor at Shippensburg University, as Will's wife is now doing, and on the meager kind of compensation that Will receives through the various enterprises that he gets into and connected with Renfrew. So I guess their days are fairly numbered in the future, but they've been, a point I want to make is those two people have been a real asset in the last couple of years to Renfrew.
This has been a recorded interview done by Betsy Payette and Marilyn McCarney on Tuesday, January 28, 1992. Mr. Leroy S. Maxwell was interviewed. He was an original board member and was the attorney for the Nicodemuses.